Hare Krishna. It is truly a honor and pleasure to be amongst all of you this evening in Goloka Dham. My special gratitude to His Holiness Satchinandan Swami Maharaj, who by the ropes of His kind affection has dragged me here once again. And my special gratitude to all of you for so kindly coming to give us your association. The subject matter that Satchinandan Maharaj has chosen for me to speak: the essential principles of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Since I just found out the subject, there is utterly no preparation or thought, but I'll say something anyway, with your permission. Srila Rupa Goswami tells the five primary principles of advancing in the path of bhakti: association of devotees, chanting the holy names of Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, residing in a holy place, and worshipping the deities. We can speak on these subjects, but I'd like to say something on the basis of what Satchinandan Maharaj spoke as a preface, and then we'll see what time is left. Maharaj spoke about faith, Shraddha. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya. That our spiritual life is simply the development of faith. With faith, we can overcome all obstacles and remain enthusiastic under all circumstances. Without faith, we easily crumble. Faith is the beginning seed which brings us to the path of bhakti and up to the point of prem. What we are doing actually is simply cultivating that faith. In 1972, Prabhupada was meeting in Los Angeles with his principal leaders worldwide. And he challenged them, "Do you have complete faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead?" When Prabhupada asks you that question, and he's looking right through your eyes, into your mind, intelligence, ego, right to your soul, you have to be honest. Nobody could say yes. Prabhupada said, if the few devotees we have in our society now just had that faith, we could make the world Krishna conscious in 18 days. Faith is very powerful. With faith, we could perform miracles. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said, if you have the amount of faith the size of a mustard seed, you could move mountains into the ocean. And actually, Prabhupada, when he was on that Jaladuta boat, no money, no supporters, nothing. But he had faith. He had faith in the words, in the order of his spiritual master, and he had faith in the holy name of Krishna. And it is the basis of that faith that he performed such a miracle. He wouldn't give up. He was enthusiastic. He was enthusiastic to serve his Guru Maharaj by preaching this message, even when there was nothing but failure all around him. Jhansi, he spent a year developing, and it was all taken away. He came to New York City, was living in the ghetto of the Bowery. Just recently, I had the very wonderful fortune of being with the first disciple of Prabhupada, who was a female. Do you all know her name? Janaki Devi. And Janaki explained how, after months and months of struggle with nothing, Prabhupada got practically all of his belongings stolen. Finally, in a beaten up building in a ghetto, on the top floor, one boy offered to let Prabhupada be his roommate. And Prabhupada was so excited. Now we have a temple. He was writing to his godbrothers in India, Vrindavan, Mayapur. Now we have a temple. Our Guru Maharaj is now, his mission could be now established in New York City. We have a facility to make into a temple. But after some time, the person threatened his life and kicked Prabhupada out. He had nothing. He had literally nothing. He had no money. He had no support. But he had one thing. He had faith. He had faith in the order of his spiritual master and faith in the power of Krishna's holy names. He had to beg some acquaintances if he could stay with them for some days till he found another place. They let him stay. They later became Mukunda Goswami Maharaj and Janaki. Prabhupada went on because he had that faith. And those people who he touched with his faith, they also developed that same spirit of nothing is impossible if it is for Krishna. Actually, if you look, there were great scholars of the Vedic literatures, sannyasis, Vaishnavas, who tried to establish Vaishnavism in the West. But they didn't make much progress. Prabhupada was sending people were only devotees for a couple months to other countries, to cities, and they started temple, and they were prosperous, and they were making people devotees. They weren't scholars. They weren't ascetics. But by Prabhupada's association, they imbibed his faith. Just a little drop of that ocean of faith that he had, that was enough to perform miracles. Prabhupada wrote a letter to San Francisco to Mukunda Goswami Maharaj, who was then a Grihastha, and Prabhupada said that, this is in 1967, he said that Shyam Sundar wants to go to London to make the Beatles Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada said, I think it's a good idea. What do you think? did it. He just went. Such enthusiasm. And that enthusiasm came from his faith. So the development of faith is all important in our spiritual lives. And Prabhupada explains how faith grows when we associate with devotees who have faith. Because association, according to the laws of nature, is so powerful that what we associate with, we become like. So we'll discuss this principle of association of devotees first. Because without such association of people who either have strong faith or are genuinely striving for faith, real faith is very, very difficult to attain or to develop. To associate with devotees means to understand our constitutional position. This is fundamental in bhakti. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita gave very extensive teachings to Srila Sanatan Goswami in Varanasi. He explains in very, very deep detail, from the basic principles to very, very advanced subjects of the spiritual world and ras. He began his teaching, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das, that we are eternally servants of Krishna. That is our nature. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He is Purusha. And as Prakriti, we are meant to be enjoyed. That means we are meant simply to serve. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that to the degree our service is selfless, to that degree Krishna will reciprocate with us. And we will actually feel happiness. The ultimate servants are the gopis of Vrindavan. Why are they the ultimate servants? Because they reveal the most selfless spirit of unconditional, unalloyed love. They want nothing for themselves. Absolutely everything of their existence is only for Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, they experience the highest happiness. Kaviraj Goswami says this is a contradiction. But it's a contradiction that must be understood on the path of true bhakti. That when you have no concern whatsoever for your own happiness, then you achieve real happiness. As long as we're concerned with our own happiness, we can never really be happy. Now, in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, we chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Now, people want happiness. Anandamayo Vyashat. Because we're nature, pleasure-seeking beings. We must have pleasure. We're such an ananda. Eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So we must have that bliss. But we must understand that Satchitananda, that blissful nature, in context to our constitutional position, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das, that we're servants. So yes, at the beginning, we might want relief from the sufferings of material life and find a higher state of happiness. But as we grow spiritually, we more and more realize that the more I want happiness, the more I'm in a very artificial, mundane condition of life. The servant's happiness is the happiness of the master. When you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. As long as we're trying to water our own little existence by finding happiness, some sense of happiness is there, but it doesn't touch the soul. It is the selfless, unconditional service toward God that is the only form of real happiness. So service really means to be selfless. And selfless essentially means without false ego. Savai pung sang puro dharmo yato bhaktir hokshije ahoitikya pratihata yigatma suprasediti. This is a very important verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. But how much do we really understand what it means? The supreme occupation for all humanity is loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such service must be unconditional, unmotivated, uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. To the degree we have no desire for our own happiness, to that degree we find ultimate happiness. Why? Because real happiness is in reciprocation of love. When we put all of our own egoistic, selfish desires aside for the pleasure of Krishna, that's an offering of great love. And Krishna reciprocates. When we want to make Krishna happy, Krishna reciprocates and gives us happiness, even if we don't want it. There is the story of Daruka. He was fanning Krishna. And seeing Krishna's beauty, he was in ecstasy. Tears began to fill his eyes. And he was cursing his ecstatic symptoms because they were interfering with his service. I can't see Krishna properly to fan him. Let these ecstasies go away so I can serve better. And Srimati Radharani also, Prabhupada quotes, when she would have these types of ecstasies, she would pray for them to go away if her trembling or whatever was interfering with her service to Krishna. So how does that pertain to us at our level of consciousness? That is our aspiration. That is the universal principle of all real spiritual paths, is unmotivated, selfless service to the Lord. Giving of ourselves for the object of our love. So Prabhupada put great emphasis on this service attitude. Because without it, even our chanting of the holy name, which is the most important of all principles for spiritual advancement in Kali Yuga, it's superficial. Prabhupada didn't tell us to just chant all day long. He told us to chant with a balance of developing service attitude. Even studying of the scripture. If we don't do it while developing a proper service attitude, it could create false pride and actually be a disturbance to our spiritual progress. Queen Kunti prayed, Janmaishwarya Shruti Shubir Edamana Matapuma Naiva Hatyapadatum Vaitvam Akinchina Gocharam. The four greatest material opulences are obstacles on the path of pure bhakti. High education, high birth, physical beauty, and wealth. Yes. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to chant the holy name in such a way that Krishna will really reciprocate and be pleased with our chanting. Trinadapi sunichena taror iva sehishnana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We should be humble like the grass, tolerant like a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect no respect for oneself. Then Krishna will be pleased to actually reveal that he's none different than his name. Then we can taste the nectar of the holy name. So being a learned scholar is not a qualification. Being an ascetic is not a qualification. Being in a high position is not a qualification. But chanting the holy names with this type of humility and respect, that is the qualification that we must understand is crucial and essential, and there's no alternative. Sometimes we see devotees, they study, became very, very learned, even in very high subjects. What the tendency is, you start thinking that you're better than someone else because you know more. Or you have certain secrets and certain information of higher topics that others don't have, so you think, I'm better, I'm more advanced. As long as there's false pride, it's very difficult to actually digest transcendental knowledge. Humility and the proper service attitude is actually like the digestive enzyme that allows you to actually realize knowledge. Similarly, position. People have high position, power, influence, facilities. That's not what we're here for. Without a proper humble service attitude, these things can ruin us, can destroy us. Sometimes we see that Maya Devi, she's always trying to distract us. Lord Chaitanya told to Rupa Goswami that when you're watering the seed of devotion, so many weeds come along with it. Yes? And unless you're really, really careful, you will mistake the weed for the Bhakti Lata Bija. Now, it might sound obvious that there's the weed in the Bhakti Lata Bija, but actually, practically everybody is mistaking the weed for the actual devotional plant. Because Maya makes them look exactly alike. Yes? And we get our rough, and we start pouring water on the weed that's actually there to choke our devotional spirit. One time a devotee in 1966 told Prabhupada, I had a dream. What was your dream? He said, you appeared to me in my dream and told me that taking LSD would help me in my chanting. And Prabhupada said, that was not me. That was a ghost in disguise of me. So yes, Maya can appear just like this is how you'll make advancement. Just put your energy, your concentration right here. But a devotee is not concerned with any position, with any facility, except Gopi Bharatur Padakamala Yora Dasa 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 Anudas. We're not concerned with bringing Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras in that sense. If we're a Brahmin, why are we Brahmin? Vaishnav Brahmin means servant of the servant of the servant. That position is simply a way to serve. But we're not attached to the position, we're attached to the service. But what happens in this world is when you have position, you get prestige and you get facilities. And we start thinking that this is advancement. And we don't want to let go of it. If we have a service and we're not doing very well and the Vaishnavas feel somebody else can do it better, why should we be attached to it? We should be attached to whatever the Vaishnavas want us to do, whatever the Guru wants us to do. That's all. That's service attitude. So we have to be very, very careful to have the proper disposition of what really we want in our life. We want humility. We want selfless service. And we don't want to get caught up by Maya in the trappings that come. Dharmasya hyapavargyasya narutataya upakalpate. Sometimes many things come to us when we act in Krishna consciousness. Devotees come, they're just unknown, unskilled, and just by practicing Krishna consciousness, they become very learned. They're able to speak, they're able to debate, they're able to sing beautiful and dance nice, and they have positions, and they have fame, and they have influence over others. And then we become attached to those things. So we missed the point. We should only be concerned with how we can serve for the pleasure of Krishna. It's a trapping that most neophyte devotees fall into. We get caught up by our external designations, even in the name of Krishna consciousness. So this selfless service attitude is really what bhakti is, devotional service. It defines itself, devotional means, as an offering of love, service. And every devotee has to be very, very, very careful to keep that as our focus. And what does service mean? It really means that we're willing to make sacrifices, we're willing to do whatever is required to give pleasure to the object of our service. And actually, a Vaishnava, everybody is the object of our service. Because in Krishna consciousness, we're nothing but servant to everybody and anybody that exists. If Krishna is the master and we're servant, that means we're the servant of every living entity. Yes, because every living entity is part of Krishna. And that is the way the great personalities think. We serve Krishna by sarvadharman puritya. By trying to surrender to his instructions. We serve Guru as the representative of Krishna. We serve advanced senior devotees by trying to hear from them and carrying out what they say and please them in that way. We serve those devotees who are equal to us in a way that we develop intimate friendship with them in a service spirit, exchanging Hari Katha exchanging prasad, exchanging gifts. And to those devotees who are junior to us, we're never their master. We're their servant. We serve them by instructing them, by encouraging them, by guiding them. And for people who are not devotees at all, we serve them by trying to enlighten them, by trying to be instruments of Krishna's compassion toward them, if they're innocent. And people who are atheistic and offensive, we serve them by avoiding their association. But in every situation, we're the servant. The most difficult thing is to give up this desire to enjoy, either with the gross senses or with the subtle false ego. Amanina manadena. To offer all respect to others and not want any respect for ourselves. It is not impossible. If we want it, if we strive for it, Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupashyate. Krishna tells in Gita that he will protect what we have and he will supply what we lack. If Krishna just sees that our desire is sincere, Krishna will help us to overcome all obstacles. Srila Prabhupada writes that the Lord accepts the purpose in which everything is offered to him. Krishna doesn't accept the thing because he doesn't need anything. He's Bhakta Vatsal. He's simply concerned with reciprocating with our intention, with our purpose. Prabhupada said, if you offer 100 million euros with false pride, you're not going to make all that much progress. Yes, you're freeing your money from using it in karmic situations, and you're going to make a little advancement, but Krishna doesn't need your 100 million euros. But if you offer 1 euro with the genuine purpose to serve, to please, you'll make tremendous spiritual advancement. What to speak if you offer 100 million in that sense? It's not really the quantity, it's the quality that Krishna accepts. Krishna accepts the purpose in which everything is offered to him. But living in this material world, we are so conditioned to superficial, external way of thinking. We think someone's great because they're a good manager or they give a good lecture. In one sense, yes. But really, what makes a person great is their humility, their dedication, and their sincerity. Because that's all Krishna sees. We serve Krishna by serving the Vaishnavas. By showing compassion to the conditioned souls, by serving the Vaishnavas, and by chanting the holy names of the Lord, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, these three simple things we can become absolutely perfect if we do them properly. Chanting Hare Krishna, serving Vaishnavas, and showing compassion to the conditioned souls. Now in Kali Yuga, to serve Vaishnavas properly, there has to be tremendous humility. Because there's every reason to fight. There's every reason to quarrel. It is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. In order for the association of devotees to be proper, to be right, we have to have a very, very good disposition. Have any of you ever seen devotees who have dissension toward each other? Who just can't get along? Why? It's false ego. Devotees who cannot forgive each other? In my observation, without forgiveness, without that real effort and spirit of forgiveness, Vaishnava association is impossible to be of a proper quality. Because we all make mistakes. We all, either intentionally or unintentionally, sometime or other, offend each other. Yes? In the Bible, Lord Jesus says, if you do not forgive others for their injustices and offenses to you, God will not forgive you for what you have done. That's a Vaishnava principle. Prabhupada quotes Chanakya Pandit that the beauty of a cuckoo bird is his sweet song. The beauty of a woman is her chastity. The beauty, even if a person is very ugly, if he's a learned scholar, he's beautiful. And the beauty of a saintly person is their forgiveness. Ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said that of all the qualities of a Brahman, forgiveness is prominent. And let us see how in the Srimad Bhagavatam, all the great souls are tested to such incredible limits and they still forgive. Isn't that a message? Yudhisthira Maharaj, what Duryodhana did to him, and he was still willing to forgive him. Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu tried to murder him, kill him, blasphemed him, tortured him. How many of you have gone through that? How many of you have been thrown in pits of snakes, thrown in the ocean and put a mountain on top of you, fed deadly poison, thrown off cliffs, trapped in deadly fires? Huh? Prahlad went through it all. Not only did he just remember Krishna, not even asking him for anything, just let me remember you, let me be your servant. But he was constantly praying for the forgiveness of the person who was trying to murder him. That's a Vaishnava. Ambarish Maharaj, Durvas Muni, for a slight offense of drinking one drop of Charanamrit, tried to murder him with a monstrous creation of his mystic powers. And for one full year, Ambarish Maharaj was fasting, just waiting for Durvas Muni to come back and feed him prasad. And ultimately, he just prayed to Lord Vishnu to forgive him. Haridas Thakur, he was beaten in 22 marketplaces for the exclusive intention of killing him in public. That's horrible, is it not? Public execution. It's humiliating, where you're just helplessly being beaten to death and everybody's watching. Vishnu wanted to save him by sending the Sudarshan Chakra. But later on, Lord Chaitanya told, my chakra did not move because from your heart of hearts, you were simply praying for these men's forgiveness. Forgive them. Give them your mercy. Give them devotion. Give them love. Send them back to Godhead. What a glorious quality. Lord Jesus Christ, crucified. And yet, he's praying, oh Lord, forgive them, they know not what they do. Now, sometimes it's easy to forgive, it's a little easier to forgive someone when you actually deserve it. But in all of these cases that we're talking about, the devotee was absolutely perfect in every possible way. It was simply due to envy. It was due to horrible, violent envy that these people tried to kill. And still they were praying from the core of their hearts to forgive. In the life of Ramanujacharya, you know the story of Kuresh. Incredible. This is a story of selfless service. There was a king. His name was Kolatunga, and he was a worshipper of Shiva, and he believed that everyone in his kingdom must be a devotee of Shiva. Now there was one man, his name was Chaturgram. He was a disciple of Kuresh, but he blooped, as we say in the Hare Krishna movement. He left his guru and became envious. And he became a minister of the king. And he told the king that if you want your kingdom to become Shivites, then you have to either defeat or kill Ramanujacharya, who happened to be Kuresh's guru. Because he's so popular, he's so learned, he's so humble, he's so attractive, that he's making thousands and thousands of people devotees. If he becomes a Shivite, everyone will be a Shivite. And if he doesn't become a Shivite, you have to kill him if you want to fulfill your aims. Ah, very good plan. So he sent his guards to Ramanujacharya to come to his kingdom to see the king. So Ramanujacharya was acharya, but he was a simple man. He was, yes, I'll go. He was making all arrangements. But Kuresh, who was a grihastha, who was a man with a wife and two children, he said, Gurudev, you can't go. Gurudev said, why? He said, I know that king. If you don't surrender to his will, he's going to kill you. Now you are so important to the world. You're the very life and soul. You're the everything for thousands and thousands and thousands of your disciples. If you die, it will be the end of all of us. But I'm insignificant. If I die, there's no loss to the world. So you take my grihastha garments and you escape. And I'll put on your sannyas garments and I'll go in your name. They will not know the difference. Ramanujacharya said, no, how can I do that? But he was begging, begging, crying and begging, please, 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 let me do this service for you. It will be the greatest honor of my life. Allow me to do this service. So Ramanujacharya put on the white garments of a grihastha and left, and the guards saw him and didn't say anything. And Kuresh came forward and said, I am Ramanuja, take me. And Ramanuja's guru, Mahapurna. He was very old. He also went because they wanted him, but he couldn't go anywhere because of his age. So they went before the king, and I'll make a long story short, but the king basically said, he asked a question. What is the ultimate goal of life? And Koresh, who everyone thought was Ramanuja, said the ultimate goal of life is unconditional, unmotivated service to Lord Vishnu. So he had all of his court pundits debate him. And he defeated all the court pundits. At that point, Kolotunga became outraged. He said, either you sign in your own handwriting that Shiva is supreme, or you'll be tortured and killed. He said, all right, let me sign. So he signed. The king was very happy until he read what he wrote. In India, there is different weights. One weight is a Shiva, and another is a Drona. And a Drona actually is a heavier weight than a Shiva. You know, it's like ounces and pounds, like that. So what he wrote, he said, even a Drona is better than Shiva. It's greater, not better. Even a Drona is greater than Shiva. When the king saw that, he was very, very upset. Just bring them to the outskirts of the city, into the forest, and torture them, and poke their eyes out, and leave them to die. Yes. So these executioners brought Koresh and Mahapurna, and they tortured and tortured and tortured and tortured, and the culmination of the torture, they just plucked out this pierced, burnt, and destroyed their eyes. Very painful. And through the whole thing, Koresh was thanking God. He was thanking God. I don't deserve to do this service for my Guru Maharaj. This is such a blessing. I'm allowed to accept all this torture on behalf of my spiritual master. What a blessing. He was just thanking Krishna the whole time. And after it was all done, he couldn't see, but with folded palms, he said to the executioners, he said, thank you very much. I'm eternally indebted to you. You allowed me to do such a great service for my spiritual master. Thank you. Their hearts melted. They didn't know what to do then. They found some people in the forest and gave them some money and said, bring them to Sri Rangam. That's where their home is. So they were brought back. Meanwhile, Ramanujacharya was in exile. Years went by. There was no communication. And then ultimately Kolotunga died of a horrible disease, the king. And Ramanujacharya called for Koresh. And when he understood that Koresh was blind, meanwhile Mahapurna, that very day where their eyes got poked out, he just told Koresh, you go back. I'm too old. I've done my work. I've given my life for my Gurudev, and I'm very happy. Now let me die. And chanting the name of Narayan, he left this world. But Koresh lived for years, totally blind. Ramanujacharya's heart felt so much compassion for him. He said, you go to the Varadraj deity in Kanchipuram, and you pray to the deity to give you your eyes back, and he will, because I will pray. So Koresh went to the deity, and he chanted bhajans and kirtans all day long. And then the deity spoke to him, Koresh, ask for a benediction and I will give you. He said, "My Lord, Chaturgram, who happened to be his disciple, who rejected him, and it was because of him that Ramanujacharya was persecuted. It was because of him that his eyes were plucked out." He said to Chaturgram, he said, "Please forgive Chaturgram and give him elevation to the spiritual world." And the deity said, "Is that all you want?" He said, "That's all I want. Then it will be done." So Ramanujacharya learns. He said, "Go back and ask. Go back and ask for your eyes." So he went back and he sang all day long for Vadarbhaj. And at the end, after hours and hours of bhajan and kirtan and worship, Bhardraj asks, "Guresh, you ask for any benediction. What would you like? I will fulfill." And Guresh says, "The king, Kolatunga, who blasphemed and poked out my eyes and wanted me to die, please forgive him and bring him to Vaikuntha." The deities, Krishna said, "Your wish will be fulfilled. Is there anything else you want?" He said, "No, no, nothing else." So Ramanuja was, he wanted his disciple to see again. He realized the nature of Koresha's devotion is it was impossible in his nature to ask for anything for himself. He just couldn't do it. He was in such a service attitude. His every thought, his every desire was for the welfare of others, especially his enemies. He couldn't ask for anything himself. Ramanujacharya understood this. "Even under my order, he can't ask Krishna for anything for himself. It has to be for others." So Ramanujacharya said that you have surrendered your life to me, therefore your body is my property. And every part of your body is my property. And your eyes are my property. Now you go and you ask the Lord to give back what belongs to me. So Koreshwat, he sang beautiful bhajans for the deity all day. And then Bhadradraj, "Koresh, ask for any benediction. What would you like?" And Koresh said, "Due to my ignorance and foolishness, my spiritual master, he entrusted me with two jewels that are his property, but I lost them. Please return them to my guru's service." And then the deities, Krishna spoke and said, "I will return your sight as for your desire so that you can use it in the service of Guru and Krishna." And hearing those words, Koresh fell unconscious. And when he woke up, he had perfect vision. His eyes were restored. This is Vaishnava. Selfless service. Always forgiving. Tatenu kampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Actually, Prabhupada explains that one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. And the type of provoking situations that is spoken of here is the provocation of being mistreated, abused, or offended by others. Bhrigu Muni was testing to see who's the greatest. Yes. His father, Brahma, came to greet him, and he just ignored his father. And his father became upset. Okay. Then his brother, Shiva, comes to embrace him. And he says, "Don't touch me, you filthy thing. Body covered with crematorium ashes, snakes on your body, you bad association, don't contaminate me." Shiva would pick up his trident, about to kill him, he said. But he stopped. And then he goes to Lord Vishnu's abode, and Lord Vishnu, oh, he gets up from his bed. "Bhrigu, you're here. I'm so happy to see you." And Bhrigu Muni, just with terrible anger in his eyes, just ran right up to Vishnu and boom, just kicked him with his foot right in his chest. That's a provoking situation, isn't it? What did Vishnu do? Vishnu sat him down on a nice seat, massaged his feet, and said, "Please forgive me. Your feet are so soft and my chest is so hard. I must have hurt you. Let me massage your feet." So it's in this particular context that Prabhupada tells that one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. So when we're provoked, when we're offended, when we're abused, when we're misused, we should be grateful that we have the chance to actually show our love for Krishna by forgiving, by being tolerant. Prabhupada interchanges these words. Tolerance means forgiveness. Otherwise, we commit aparads. So yes, these are actually essential principles for the advancement in Krishna consciousness. They're not details. They're not something for very advanced devotees. They're essential. Otherwise, why every story of the Bhagavatam practically is about forgiveness, tolerance, humility. Because in that spirit, we could chant the holy names in such a way that Krishna will want to reciprocate. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahadavagni nivapana. If we don't have the right consciousness, even if we chant with rapt attention, is Krishna pleased? If we're offending people, if we're selfish, if we're egoistic, if we're attached to positions, we're attached to mundane facilities, is Krishna really pleased with our chanting? You know, even impersonalists can concentrate and focus their minds on an object. Yes? And it's a fact that sometimes yogis, they have such intense concentration of their minds. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the yoga process there's yama, niyama, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and then ultimately samadhi. Samadhi is the ability to completely fix with total concentration one's mind. But even a person in samadhi cannot taste even a single particle of a speck of dust from Krishna's lotus feet. So yes, it is our duty when chanting to try to really concentrate on the holy name. But at the same time, if our concentration is not with the proper disposition, it's not going to have the maximum effect because it's not really going to please Krishna. We have to have this service attitude. And what is service attitude? It means this type of humility, this type of tolerance, this type of respectfulness, this type of willingness to give Krishna pleasure through service to Guru, service to Vaishnavas, and compassion to the conditioned souls. Prabhupada was willing to endure heart attacks, seasickness, strokes, and all kinds of other difficulties for people who were meat eaters, taking intoxication, taking illicit sex, atheists, and he didn't even personally know a single one of them, but he was willing to undergo all that for them. That is selfless service. And that should be what we're striving for. If that's our desire and we are sincere and we take the name of God with that aspiration, Krishna will certainly fulfill our desires. And it's already 9 o'clock. Is there any questions? We can continue. Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, if one out of great foolishness are not able to tolerate these provoking situations and misplease the Vaishnavas and misplease the spiritual master, how can he show his regret and how can he again please the devotees and his spiritual master?
Devotees should have the capacity to beg forgiveness from their hearts, not just superficially or simply out of etiquette, but from the heart, to beg forgiveness. Because ultimately, Krishna is seeing from the heart. When you beg forgiveness from someone, you're actually forgiven. Krishna within the heart forgives you. Yes? That means he has to see that we're sincere, that we mean it. It's not just a show. So we beg forgiveness from the heart. And if we're actually serious, then we will be very, very attentive not to commit those same mistakes again. Yes, that is what Nityananda Prabhu told Jagayan Madhai. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they said, once they begged forgiveness, they said, just don't do these things again. Beg forgiveness, don't do it again, and take shelter of the holy name. It were those three principles that deliver Jagai and Madhai, who were more sinful than we could ever be, even if we try with all our might. Yes? No matter how many sins you or me do, it won't be a problem for Yamaraj to keep track of them. But Jagai and Madhai, Yamaraj could not keep track of their sins. But they did three things. They begged forgiveness, they vowed to not do it again, and they took shelter of the holy name in the association of devotees. And that is the process for all of us. Madhai, he was so ashamed of his sins, and Nityananda Prabhu said, just constantly chant the holy names and do menial service for the Vaishnavas. And menial service, he said, for everyone. Build that ghat on the bank of the Ganges. And everybody who comes, you just serve them in every possible way to make them happy. So this is the process. Begging forgiveness. Not performing those sins again. Humble service. And sincere chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Hari Bol. Is there any other question? Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, you explained that for a neophyte, it is almost unavoidable to fall into this trap from time to time to please take this reed or the reed Bhaktivata. So it seems that it is even a kind of regular part of our development to come again and again to these traps. So my questions are, how can you recognize it? It happened, and how you can. So what is the proper adjustment? Because it seems it's not just one big catastrophe in the life, it's just a regular thing that comes again and again, so there must be a regular adjustment for it.
That is why Prabhupada told us we should study his books carefully. Otherwise we are so easily diverted by material energy. Unless we actually have proper discrimination. But it's not just studying the books, it's practicing what we study. Throughout Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's describing we are the eternal soul, we're not this body, and we're the servants of Krishna. Yes? So we should understand Prabhupada's books according to our capacity. But we must have a proper service attitude. Really, what it's all about is false ego. You know, there's the gross desires for gross sense gratification. It doesn't take that much to know that that's a weed. Yes? I mean, most new devotees know that, you know, eating meat or having illicit sex is a weed. Yes? Material of people who aren't devotees don't know these things, but we know these things. These are weeds. But what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about a lot is the subtle weeds, the desire for adoration, the desire for prestige, the desire for fame and glory, the desire for honor. Yes? When these weeds grow, then they force us to make offenses. And the result of those offenses is then you can't even discriminate that usually you end up having a gross fall down because you're just not protected by Krishna. So we should be very, very careful not to think that there's anything great about any position except servant. We're not concerned with being pujari or head pujari, or temple commander, or temple president, or regional secretary, or GBC, or sannyasi, or guru. These are all posts. If you become attached to any of these things, you'll be distracted. Being the president simply is a service. Being the head pujari is it's a way to serve. Being a guru is a way to serve. Being a GBC is a way to serve. We shouldn't want distinction or glorification. We shouldn't be attached to the influence. We should only be attached to the service. Our real advancement is how we're becoming humble and selfless in our service. Our advancement is not in our position. And our advancement is not in what recognition we get. Our advancement is not what facilities we get. Because when you become proud, you usually become intolerant. Yes? And we fall down. So we should recognize these weeds by hearing in the association of devotees, by studying books, and by actually being sincere to apply these principles. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Is there any other question? Yes. What should we do when other devotees are quarreling with each other? Really, that happens? Depends on our position. if we're in a position to actually try to mediate or bring a higher understanding to them, enlighten them, to come above these quarrels, which are usually petty, egoistic quarrels. But the ego never, the ego is so, so clever that the false ego will, usually will never allow you to think that this is just my false ego. Right? Then it would be easy if the ego is just so liberal to just tell you that you're quarreling because you're an egomaniac. No, no. Your false ego doesn't work like that. False ego, no, I'm humble like a blade of grass. It's this person, their problem. I'm humble. Everybody knows that. I know that. But this person... Yes. That's the way the ego works, is it not? Prabhupada says, when another devotee is offended, then we're strong. But if we're offended, we just take humble position. So, if we actually have the capacity to help enlighten people to come above these, Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. Yes, the universal principle. Love me, love my dog. And we're all Prabhupada's dogs. We're all Krishna's dogs, right? So we should learn to love each other. Prabhupada said, everyone is Prabhu except me. I'm Das, Das, Adu Das. Prabhupada said, you have to feel that, and you have to mean that, and you have to live by that. So to try to enlighten people to come above their quarrels is one thing. If you don't really have the position or the influence to enlighten them, then at least you shouldn't participate. You shouldn't condemn them either, thinking I'm better than them because I'm not quarreling. That's another weed coming up. We should just pray and try to purify our own hearts. If you can enlighten them by your words, that's nice. Or at least by your example, try to be a positive influence. Does that answer your question? And of course, if we chant the holy names in a proper disposition of consciousness, then all of these anarthas are cleansed from our hearts. But if we don't really understand these principles we're speaking today very carefully and strive to live by them, we're not going to chant very long. We're going to make offenses. We're going to lose our taste for chanting. Service attitude is all important. And service attitude is such a deep, profound subject. It doesn't mean just doing what you're told. What we were speaking this evening is just, it's just a part, essential parts of what service attitude is about. Very essential. Humility, tolerance and forgiveness, and respect to others. Without these principles, we don't really have a proper service attitude. And we must be enthusiastic. Are there any other questions? Yes.
Sometimes. So what can help me to learn?
Sometimes it's very hard. Sometimes it's a lifetime process. But we should understand it. The principles we've been actually, you know, I just saw in Newsweek magazine, the front page articles was about one of the feature articles was how forgiveness is good for health. Because it's a fact. This is from a medical point of view. that people, it's very difficult for them to overcome diseases if they're holding resentment toward others. It actually kills emotionally and physically the body. It's very dangerous. It's like if you have a red hot coal, it's like what we saw today. We were in a sauna today. If there's a red hot coal and you pick it up in your hand and you're holding it, waiting it to throw it at your enemy, what happens? What happens? Huh? As long as you hold that coal, you are being burnt. So just let go of these things. If we can't let go, that resentment is going to kill us. Holding resentment for any other person actually is killing our own bhakti. It just burns and kills our own devotional spirit. That is why Tarori Vasihishnuna. And sometimes, you know, pain is deep and we have resentment and we've been hurt. We should pray. We should pray to God to give us the power to forgive. Because as long as we hold on to resentment toward anyone for anything, it's just burning us and it's a great impediment to any spiritual progress. We should chant the holy name sincerely. And we should really try to purify ourselves by letting go. Does that answer your question? It may take years, but it's necessary. Yes?
If you then associate with such a person who are suffering because of this, then and you're not able to help in that situation, because of lack of good qualities yourself, then you said about association is very important. Then should one then step out of that association instead of just feeling sorry and hoping?
If devotees are offending other Vaishnavas, we should certainly stay apart from that situation. If people are suffering themselves due to anarthas or holding on to anarthas, that's not a reason to not associate with someone. Because almost everyone's like that. But if they're expressing it through offensive behavior or offensive words, that is very dangerous.
So it's mainly thinking about your suffering. People in general, some can be very irritated about the neighbor or upstairs.
We should be tolerant and forgiving toward them, because actually every person who is abusive to others is a victim themselves, somewhere in their hearts. Actually, if you go back into the history of people's lives and previous lives, practically anything they do now that's bad, you could forgive them for. Because you could understand what brings a pure spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, to the point of doing such crazy things. They're just victimized by Maya. That's why great souls are so forgiving. They see that everyone's actually part of Krishna. They're all victimized by Maya. They're all victimized by circumstances to be the way they are. Of course, they choose to be victimized, but still. What does it really mean to be servant? We should be there to be instruments of compassion, to try to help people overcome their weaknesses. And we should arise above all of the influences that Kali tries to put between us to create disunity, to create resentment, to create hatred. It's very important. Yes, Prabhu.
I heard you talk about the importance of forgiving, because it's Kali Yuga and there's moral hypocrisy, there's so much fighting going on. Without forgiving, you cannot go forward. Do we just have to concentrate on forgiving and understand that we're in this frying pan of material life at this time? Or is there something that we have as a responsibility to fulfill Prabhupada's mission to create a society where abuse is actually very much minimized and devotees can live in an environment where they don't have to always practice this art of forgiveness as the only solution for them to go forward in their lives, but they live in an environment where there is so much love and affection and shelter that they can flourish in their devotional lives.
It's not that our only concern is forgiveness. We want to be thinking of Krishna. The goal of life is to always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. But in this world, without these qualities, without the quality of forgiveness, you can't really think of Krishna properly, because you'll be making offenses. Prahlad Maharaj was always thinking of Krishna, but he showed the quality in which he could always think of Krishna. And vice versa. One who's always thinking of Krishna is spontaneously forgiving to everyone because he's experiencing Krishna. He's being empowered by Krishna. So your question, we have to be very, very honest with ourselves. Because, the question is, are we creating a conducive Krishna conscious environment that is actually encouraging people's faith, encouraging people's enthusiasm, encouraging people's spiritual lives by the way we're trying to solve the problem? Or are we actually disturbing people and creating doubt and creating pain in people's hearts? Prabhupada said you can judge a thing by its result too. That's all important. Because it's easy to think you're right. Everyone thinks they're right. What's all important is, what's the best way to serve Krishna? And in my experience, and from what I've learned of the Shastras, when there is a situation which is complex, if we take things in our own, we'll usually make big mess. We should actually take consultation from senior Vaishnavas. What's the best way to resolve and best serve in that situation? That's the Vaishnava way of doing things. Is if there is a situation where, should it be done this way or this way? What will have the best effect? What will have the most benefit for the individuals, for the society? Is to consult people, devotees who are senior and learned, and take their opinions and follow. Does that answer your question? Because there are many details that could be according to time and circumstance where you deal with certain things in different ways. So to take things in our own hand and think we're right could be very dangerous. It's best to consult senior devotees who have a neutral vision and see the whole picture. Any other questions? Should we have a few minutes kirtan, or should we end?
Yes.
You're not too old. You're not too old. No one will believe that you are old. Satchidananda Maharaj is the most ever youthful devotee I have ever seen. I hope I... This was... I'm not a good speaker, but if we just do whatever was spoken, we will be living in Vaikuntha. Prabhupada gives a very simple definition of what Vaikuntha is. Do you know what that is? Prabhupada says, Vaikuntha is the place where every devotee is thinking everyone else is better than me. That is Vaikuntha. Everyone else is better than me. Let me serve them. To the degree that atmosphere is shared by devotees, we are in this spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.